Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us once again on Queensberry Rules Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensberryRules.com. And, of course, joining me like every week, well, almost every week, is James Foley of BadLeftHook.com. James.
Patrick, what is going on?
We have a new heavyweight champion, buddy. A brand new heavyweight champion of the world, of the whole world, globally.
The world champion?
I'm buddy of the planet Earth.
Okay.
I'm just wondering. I'm making sure you understand.
See, I mean, that's Klitschko retired, right? Both Klitschkos.
More or less. Less, but yes, yeah, definitely. But hey, I wanted to real quick before we get into the actual boxing. How are you feeling after Beyonce's sister attacked you? You feeling all right?
I don't know, dude. I'm trying not to know what you're referencing. You know, I don't know what line that.
It's better if you don't.
Yeah,
it's just really better if you don't. Really, I'm ashamed to even know what the fuck's going on.
I only look at boxing related stuff online or in anything. So I have no idea.
For porn. But yeah, all I know is if it doesn't come from Rick Glaser, I don't read it.
These are the biggest, you know. Glaser has, who is Glaser's mole at Golden Boy?
I don't know. You know, it'd be hilarious as if it were Oscar De La Hoya. If Oscar was leaking his own secrets to everybody. That would be some type of meta joke. I don't even know what meta joke means, but I'm pretty sure that's what it would be. Oscar, give us jobs.
854,302
buys. Nah, something like that, yeah. Well, hey, since we're there, do you think that that's bad? I mean, honestly, do you think that doing, let's assume that the 850,000 buys for Mayweather-Maidana is a real thing. Hasn't been confirmed. I don't know if it will ever be confirmed, just kind of like the Guerrero numbers. But if that were the case, do you think that's bad?
I would think it's probably a little bit on the lower end of the projections, you know, just based on what the official numbers are for most of the Mayweather fights. I mean, obviously against Alvarez, they did over 2 million buys, right? And, I think he's been over 1 million in almost every one of his fights since De La Hoya, I think. With the exception being Guerrero, which was debated, you know, some people thought reported it was like 870, and, Espinoza maintained it was over 1 million. I would think so. I mean, you just do the math on that, Mayweather's $32 million guarantee. Because, he's making a crazy amount of money no matter how you slice it, and more than any other boxer, you know, including Pacquiao now, who probably isn't making that much more than, you know, whatever his $20 million guarantee was for fighting Bradley. But you do the math, you know, and it's like $70 times the paper, you know, times however many buys there are. So if there's 1 million buys, you know, 70 million, and then half of that goes to the cable companies. So that's like, that would be 35 million. And then I think the gate does another 15. So that's 50. And then maybe there's some additional, you know, revenue coming in. You know, so with 1 million buys, once you pay out the undercard and all the costs and stuff like that, I don't know. There was an article on Forbes, but basically I think Mayweather adds another, like, something like between $5 and $10 million to that 32 number. So he would make like 40 something with 1 million buys. You know, and it kind of goes up exponentially. Like he made against Canelo, I think his total net was actually around 70 million or 75 million or something like that. 800, I mean, it would be less than that, obviously. You know, I think with 800,000 buys, I don't think Mayweather would earn that much more, maybe just a few million dollars more than his guarantee. And, you know, it wouldn't be a huge blockbuster, you know, in terms of profits the way that the Alvarez fight was.
Yeah, I obviously...
But it's not,
well,
bad. It's not bad for Floyd. Because either way,
well,
you're making $35 million. So.
Oh, yeah, no. I think he's going to walk away from just about any deal with money. But, you know, I'm kind of taking the kind of, I guess, semi-complex approach in that I think that there's room to kind of, like, look at it from a few different directions. The first one being, like, you know, in the short term, yeah, that's probably not a really great number, and it's probably not exactly what Showtime and CBS and everybody wanted. But at the same time, I also kind of look at it as like, you know, apart from just this fight, you know, just the kind of this fight in the capsule, you have Golden Boy and Showtime still has Floyd Mayweather, who's the most, you know, probably the most popular or, you know, the most anti-hero type of boxer in the world right now. And obviously the most popular in terms of, you know, getting looks and getting buys and all that type of stuff. But, you know, on top of them having Floyd Mayweather on their side, past that, you know, he was able to sell almost 900,000 pay-per-views, assuming that number is correct, against a guy who was a really big underdog and who very, very few members of the media or pundits or whatever thought that was going to be, you know, they did not think he was going to be competitive with Floyd Mayweather. I'm stumbling over my words right now. But in any event, they didn't think that he was going to be doing much with Floyd Mayweather, and yet he was still able to sell about as many as, you know, damn near as many as Pacquiao Bradley 2 did, and that was considered like a, you know, a marquee matchup type of thing. What's that?
Glazer had Pacquiao Bradley 2 only doing like 700.
Oh.
All right, let's
so I don't
Glazer
even
numbers,
know.
But
apparently he knows... I don't know.
I think Pac Bradley 2 was,
this shit.
The official number was like 775 to 800.
Well, there you go. So it did. He outsold it. But regardless,
yeah.
You know, it's I guess I'm looking at the bigger picture and the way that, you know, I'm really hating to bring up this motherfucker's name. But anyway, this dude Glazer is suggesting that, you know, the Showtime's all pissy about Floyd Mayweather and that they're like basically ready to kick this dude out. And I'm like, come on, man.
Well,
look at the big picture, and especially what the Canelo fight did, and whatever type of red ink or losses you want to talk about, the Canelo fight alone basically made up for them. And there's still more fights on Floyd's contract, so I don't think there's any question that Showtime's still pretty happy with what they got.
It's tough. I mean, it's a good. I mean, 900 is a great number. It's probably going to be the best-selling pay-per-view of the year, you know, unless Floyd fights a real marquee opponent in the fall. Or maybe a rematch would do more, you know, more buys because the first fight was so competitive. You know, it's only disappointing in the lens of a Floyd number because, you know, he'd been doing over a million for the most part. The Guerrero fight was rumored to do less than that. So if it ends up being, you know, 900, 800, it's only disappointing, you know, in the context of that his fights had done better before.
Exactly.
But, you know, also because there's such a large guarantee attached to it, that means... It's kind of, you know, rare because, like, I think Pacquiao oftentimes had a really low, like a $6 million guarantee, even when those pay-per-views were doing over a million. You know, and I guess a lot of that was for, like, tax reasons or something or some kind of, like, I'm not really sure, but basically, you know, he may have ended up earning 30 or 40, but on paper we only saw that he was getting paid six, so it's, like, kind of hard for us to, you know. But here we know exactly, we kind of already know, like, how much money's going out. You know, with all the official purses, because that 32, that's a big chunk of what Mayweather's going to end up, you know, walking with. So because we know how much they're spending, you know, and it's not Showtime spending that money. I think it's the promoter that guarantees it. But we know how much is guaranteed. That gives us a better idea of kind of how profitable it may or may not be. But if you do the math, I mean, even 800,000, 900,000 still going to be profitable. That you're going to make over $50 million on the whole promotion, and, you know, the undercard didn't cost that much. So it's still going to, you know, people are still going to make money, Golden Boy. And, you know, I think Showtime, it's, you know, I don't know, we'll probably get on a longer discussion than we should, but with the network, I think they look at pay-per-views differently, you know. They don't make money on, they're not, it's not like, you know, they're not going to take a percentage of that or whatever. I think there's just like a fee negotiated between, you know, for them to put it up or whatever, and it obviously gets the network a lot of publicity. But that, because it's pay-per-view and it's not on the network, it's a little bit different in terms of like how they, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and they're also like, looking at subscriptions too, and that also factors into the long run type of thing that I was talking about, which is that there's no question that Showtime has, you know, I don't know that I would say that they've overtaken HBO. I think that that's kind of strong to say and a little bit early to say, but at the very least, they have put themselves right about neck and neck with HBO in terms of boxing programming and, you know, pull within the sport. And that alone is worth whatever, you know, handful of millions of dollars they lost on this promotion or that promotion, whatever. You know, even if it is the promoter putting it up, regardless, you know, they do have some financial stake in it. And, you know, squish all that because they're just, you know, right along the marquee names in boxing. And that's difficult to buy.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, they're absolutely, at worst, equal with HBO right now. You could make an argument that they have surpassed them. I would still kind of call it even, I guess, because I think HBO has a lot of really good fighters. The problem, though, is, like, the Showtime Golden Boy, a lot of those great matchups, like, obviously, Floyd Canelo was a huge one, but, like, Matisse and Garcia last year, you know, like, they've had a lot of big fights that have kind of, like, where they, on the HBO side, like, there will be huge fights, but, and, you know, obviously it sucked to lose Stevenson and Kovalev, but some of their fights haven't developed yet. You know, like Golovkin-Ward, that could be a huge fight someday, but that's not, you know, it's not going to happen yet. And so we have had on HBO, they have a lot of awesome fighters, like, you know, Golovkin and Kovalev and Provodnikov and all those guys, but some of them haven't really been fighting, you know, the great competition. And so you haven't had, like, two-sided matchups and you haven't had deep undercards. And, you know, Golden Boy's gotten so lucky that a lot of their fights that didn't look great on paper, I mean, almost every single one of their fights ended up being competitive. So, including
even that pay-per-view. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even that pay-per-view wound up being much better than a lot of us thought it was going to be. Well, much better than I thought it was going to be, that's for sure. It was, for the most part, watchable.
I mean, it's what we pay for. We want to see Mayweather get challenged and get, you know, face adversity. Because so many of his fights have turned into just really boring, you know, kind of pre-scripted whitewashes after the first couple of rounds.
Yeah.
So it delivered completely, and it's just like so many other, you know, Pauly and Broner put in a good fight, and Garcia and Judah, and Garcia Herrera, and a lot of their fights, you know. And it's like maybe their marquee fighters aren't as good as we thought they were, or maybe they're just digging up good quality opponents that don't, you know, we're not giving up credit. But whatever formula that they're using, I mean, they've had a lot of really, like, memorable, exciting fights, and being able to stack the undercard so deep is huge. And the fact that the network has given, you know, time slots, like putting on, you know, like Showtime Extreme putting on the undercard, so that you're a fight fan, I mean, you're getting 5-6 fights sometimes, where in HBO you're getting one or two, and the formula's kind of been, like, a pretty boring, like, not that exciting opener, and then one of their, like, big knockout guys just, like, destroying a mismatched opponent after a couple rounds. And that's what the last few HBO broadcasts have felt like. So, right now, I mean, I have no problem saying so. I mean, HBO is only clinging to that tie on history, you know, on the fact that, like, they've had such a storied history with boxing. They've always been the number one network. And they do have some huge, you know, potentially, you know, budding stars in the pipeline. But, man, it's right now it's the Mayweather era, you know, and Showtime's killing it.
Well, you know, we've talked about this recently, and, you know, this is like a total potential rabbit hole of a discussion here, but I'll bring it up anyway because it ties into the heavyweight fight that I kind of want to recap in a minute. But do you think that maybe Al Haymon and Showtime's association with Al Haymon has anything to do with how well they've been doing?
I don't know. I mean, obviously their association with Golden Boy has been huge for them, and by extension, you know, a lot of those guys are Haymon clients. We'll see. I mean, if you know, some of the rumors are true, it'd be fascinating to see what would happen if there was some kind of a split at Golden Boy and all the Al Haymon guys went in one direction. I mean, that's a lot of their stable. Oscar would still have, like, the cash cow, like Canelo Alvarez and maybe a few other people. But, yeah, Heyman's got a lot of guys under his belt now. And wouldn't that be interesting if that suddenly became, like, a third promoter in, you know, the Cold War? I don't know. I think Showtime, you know, getting involved. Yeah, I mean, you wonder what would happen, right? Like, would Oscar, because he's been talking about, you know, working with Top Rank again, would he take his guys to HBO, and would Heyman's guys be fighting on Showtime? I don't know.
And that would be a pretty crazy dynamic there, especially if, I mean, you know, there have been rumors and all that type of stuff. And speaking of the aforementioned motherfucker that I brought up, but he predicted about 2 months ago that in a month, that all this stuff would blow wide open and you know, Schaefer was going to split from Golden Boy. Well, that hasn't happened. It still could happen, I suppose, but it hasn't happened. But if that did wind up happening and then, you know, Al Heyman starts his own promotional company or something like that with Richard Schaefer, all of a sudden, you know, whatever fighters are left, Golden Boy starts working with Top Rank again, that could get pretty interesting for sure. At the very least, it could, you know, open up some possibilities that weren't there before, at least in terms of massing fighters.
Yeah, Heyman is swooping like everybody at 140, 147, 154, so maybe they just try to monopolize those divisions and then let, I don't know. He's got some other guys too, and it was interesting too to hear Floyd at the press conference for Maidana talking about Mikey Garcia and Andre Ward being the next future pay-per-view stars. You know what I'm saying, though? Like, why would he be mentioning them unless there was some... And we've heard that Garcia was, like, disgruntled with his contract at Top Rank, and obviously Ward's been trying to become a free agent. You know what I mean? So it's like, that wasn't a coincidence. I mean, like, obviously,
yeah,
Heyman...
The Ward thing might have been premature. The Ward thing might have been premature because that was right around, or it was either right before or right after they had ruled that Andre Ward's contract with Goosen is still valid. So maybe he was a little premature in thinking that Ward was going to be able to break. I don't know. You know, I'm just speculating. But, you know, neither of those guys are even fighting right now. So,
yeah.
I guess they could be pay-per-view stars in the future. But, hey, I mean, Ward's kind of already had his opportunity to make himself that. And he had a handful of really good wins, and it didn't happen. And I don't think it's going to happen. But,
well,
I guess.
You know, if Ward wanted to fight somebody like Golovkin or Kovalev, and they wanted to put that on pay-per-view, I mean, I'd go around telling people I thought it was an awesome fight and they should order it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Most boxing fans.
No, yeah, don't get me wrong. There's possibilities, but...
Right, yeah, you're right. I mean, he hasn't done that, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, there's possibilities and everything. And yeah, a Golovkin fight in particular is one I'd look forward to. Well, you know, since I brought Heyman up, and I kind of brought him up for a reason, but the Stivern-Areola rematch, well, Chris Areola is, of course, with Al Heyman, or at the very least was. I'm not sure that he is still, but I'm pretty sure that the Watson twins were in his corner or something like that on Saturday when he fought Stivern again. I mean, I was very skeptical that ESPN was going to be buying into a heavyweight fight because, you know, while it's good, I think that ESPN should be involved in boxing. While I think that it's good that they're investing money in boxing and everything, I was like, why are they doing it with a heavyweight fight though in the year 2014? But luckily it wound up being actually a pretty entertaining fight as far as heavyweight fights go these days. And, you know, Areola lost again, but I have to say that I think that ESPN was kind of vindicated a little bit by the fact that it was a pretty decent fight. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it was worthy. And I think it's probably the best result for boxing that Stivern won. You know, because, like, all the stuff aside, and, I mean, I love Areola. I think he's, like, as far as, like, who do I want to see in a post-fight interview, he's near the top of my list. You know, he's an exciting fighter, too, and he's got a ton of heart. And I, you know, really do respect the guy. But we've kind of seen him falter at the top level, you know, not just against Klitschko, but Stivern, I was dubious about him, you know, before the first Areola fight. I think the only time he'd ever been on U.S. TV before that, wasn't he fighting, like, Ray Austin on HBO one time?
Oh, man. He could have. I'm not even sure. I don't think that I had ever seen him before the first Areola fight, to be honest.
I think he was in that one fight that somehow was on HBO, yeah, against Ray Austin. And it was like Austin was kind of outboxing him for most of the fight, and then Stivern basically just caught him with like a huge punch and stopped him very late. But it wasn't the kind of performance you would look at, you know, Stivern and say that you'd want to see him again. You know, he didn't look great, but he did look really good in that first Areola fight, and I think this proves it. Like, it just wasn't a fluke. I mean, the guy's is a good fighter, and he's obviously a powerful puncher. And even though I think this was a close fight before that round, you know, he caught him with a huge punch just like in the first fight, and this time he finished the job. And he definitely, I think, moves to the top of the list as far as, like, the most intriguing contender for Vladimir Klitschko.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that I actually kind of remember now, because while you were talking, I looked up Stivern's record, because I was like, wait a second, had I seen him before the first Areola fight? And no, I'm pretty sure I didn't. And one of the reasons why is because I specifically remember, I'm pretty sure it was on the show here too, but I remember looking up Stivern's record before the first fight, and I mentioned on the show because I'm about 9 years old and thought it was hilarious that he fought a guy with the last name of Manswell. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
Never seen him, I don't think. But, yeah, you know, I have to say, man, Chris Areola, dude, he's a guy who's, for me anyway, and I think that they were also trying to sell him this way on ESPN, but he's easy to root for. He's a guy that you want to read interviews from him. You know, he's kind of like, even like, you know, Paul Malignaggi in that way, in that he gives good interviews. He says a lot of things that are funny, a lot of things that are true, you know, a lot of things that just kind of make you chuckle, and a lot of things that are, you know, blasphemous and everything. But in the ring, it's just kind of like you almost don't want to root for him, because you're bound to be let down or get embarrassed, you know. And that doesn't really apply to Paul Malignaggi as much, but, you know, Chris Areola is just a guy that I just don't understand how, if you're making as much money as that. Now, most fighters don't make six figures, but if you're making that much money, really? Like, you can't get into better shape than that? You can't at all? You're still going to have titties? Come on. So, you know, It's just, I'm kind of, at least on, for my part, I'm kind of, I guess, done with the dude. You know, I wish him well, and I hope he does well and everything, but at any type of world-class elite or top level, I think that it's over, man.
Yeah, this is tough, because, you know, prior to this, we were saying, like, oh, I'd love to see the winner fight Deontay Wilder, especially if it was Areola, and not like it's a disgrace to lose to Stivern, but I think I'm far less intrigued by, you know, potential Areola-Wilder fight now, too. Because Stivern's probably going to wait and fight Klitschko. Kind of see them trying to go in that Wilder-Areola direction. But it just loses something now, you know? It's like, now that we've seen him knocked out like that, it's, you know, isn't it going to be that impressive if Deontay Wilder does it? I mean, it still means something, because Areola's still, you know, somebody, and he's decently skilled, and he's had a lot of experience, and obviously fought higher caliber of opponent. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not totally against watching him fight again at a certain level of, you know, but he's definitely moving in, you know, going to become a gatekeeper. I mean, he's not going to be the A side unless he can, you know, win a couple fights now.
And it's actually funny, because you brought it up a minute ago that, apart from the two Areola fights, I don't know really anything about Bermain Stivern. So, you know, having to try to judge how we would do against this guy or that guy based on those fights, I really have no idea. But at the very, very least, we've seen other guys. I think it was Travis Walker, for example, was able to floor Chris Areola, and he was able to kind of wobble him and hurt him, and the you know, Chris has been hurt and stuff like that previously, but nobody's done that to him. Nobody's been able to really, you know, knock the ever-loving shit out of him like that. And so I think that there's no question that there's something to Stivern. What it is, I have absolutely no idea, but, you know, I would personally like to see him against a, you know, Deontay Wilder or even the winner of a Fury Chisora 2. But, yeah, you're probably right. My guess is that he's probably going to wait it out, and especially because Vlad Klitschko seems to be showing some genuine interest in that fight. You know, mm-hmm. my guess is he'll probably wait it out and try to get the Klitschko shot.
Yeah, and I think he has to. I mean, like, I was, you know, just thinking the same thing. I mean, I'd love to see, you know, one more fight before Klitschko. You know, like, put Stivern in with, like, Deontay Wilder, or Stivern against Bryant Jennings. You know, I mean, you can make any of these matchups, and the winner really gets validated, you know, as a legitimate challenger, but that's not really going to happen. I mean, you know, I think Areola is a legit, like, top 10 heavyweight for the last few years. He's fought on the highest level. You know, Stivern's now beaten him twice and pretty clearly. So, he, you know, he obviously, I mean, you look at guy like I was thinking of last week was Marius Bock. You remember that dude?
Yeah.
But
oh,
you
yeah.
look at, like, you know, Francesco Pianetta and Alexander Leopai, and, you know, the idea of Romain Stivern fighting Klitschko is not that ridiculous. So, and obviously, economically, I mean, it's he's going to do that. You know, they're not going to give him enough money to fight one of the kind of prospect contenders, you know, as much as he'll make for a Klitschko fight. But, of course, with Don King, who knows? Maybe the guy just sits on the shelf for, like, 2.5 years and doesn't fight anybody.
That's my concern. That's my legitimate concern. And I think that it's a concern that's totally founded in reality. And, you know, I mean, I saw... Man, I wish I could remember who it was. It was like a day and a half ago, and I can't remember shit. I'm getting old. But
Blazer?
Tim Starks, who, of course, is the leader of Queensberry Rules, was talking with somebody about how Don King was back. And I was kind of just – well, Tim's position was basically the same as my position, which is really like having pretty much like one fighter who has a piece of a heavyweight title that like doesn't exist, that makes him back. I mean, I guess, you know, I'm not trying to, like, get all down on Don King or whatever, but he still has a fairly small stable of fighters now, none of which ever fight, you know, so that's my concern yeah. with Stivern, is that he's going to wind up falling into that trap, and then, I mean, he had, I think it was 2 fights in 2011, one in 2012, one in 2013, he's had one so far this year, it might be his only fight this year. You know, this just doesn't seem productive for any fighter, for, like, to me. It doesn't seem like this is a good idea for any fighter to be fighting once on a calendar year. Financially, anything.
Yeah. But you also got to remember, I think with Don King's ego, chances are that the Klitschko fight will get made because he's going to want to be on, you know, he's going to want to be in the spotlight. So even though...
Well, I hope so for his sake.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has to. I mean, it's, you know, it's like kind of like the last chance he has really to beat. But, you know, what do you think Stivern's upside is? Let's say Stivern is the guy who, you know, pulls the impossible and, you know, somehow dethrones Klitschko after all this time. Then I think it could get problematic, you know, as far as if he's still with Don King, having that heavyweight belt ever, you know, be up for grabs.
I don't know. I mean, Vlad Klitschko is a guy who is just kind of like, he's invincible except for, he's like the Death Star, all right? I'm going to totally go fucking full-on nerd here. He's like the Death Star. He's basically invincible except for a really small, lump rat-sized window, and that's his chin. And if you're able to touch his chin, if you're able to get past the fucking manaconda octopus wrestling arms, and touch his chin, you can win. But nobody's really ever able to. If Berman Stivern is actually able to reach his chin and knock him out, I mean, that would be very impressive. But, yeah, I do think that that could be kind of a funky situation a little bit, having the heavyweight title back in Don King's hands when Don King is, like, 137 years old and doesn't really seem to care much about boxing and... Yeah, I don't know. That would be kind of a weird situation.
Well, obviously, when he was a huge promoter, he wasn't, you know, necessarily afraid to make big fights. But now that he has like such a small stable, there has been a lot of kind of, you know, garbage that seems like it's gone on to kind of prevent his fighters from getting fights that they could have had. I mean, when Tavoris Cloud was kind of a hot light heavyweight and top three or four, whatever, he fought once a year, which made no sense.
Yeah.
You know, for a few years, but like. I don't know, man. I mean, it'd be pretty cool, but if Stiver knocks out Klitschko, like, he's not, you know, Don King doesn't have another Mike Tyson on his hands. I mean, I don't think Stiver becomes, like, a, you know, pay-per-view star or anything like that, but it would be interesting to kind of see what they do with him.
You know, I don't really know. There's not really much about him that's, like, really, you know, eye-catching or
he's an interesting guy, but what demographic is he going to appeal to? It's a pretty small, you know, ethnically it's a pretty small group, and yeah, but he could become a bigger star in Canada. I mean, I don't know,
man. Well, he'll definitely have Andre Berto in his corner.
Berto will be there.
Yeah,
for sure.
So, well, Berto counts for like a few hundred people. So at the very least, he'll have Berto.
Gene Pascal?
Yeah, Gene. My buddy Gene. Deary Gene.
No, it's a Hopkins.
Yeah, that guy.
Hopkins pronounces it. yeah, it's funny because some of those guys are so popular, but Stiver, it seems like, is not popular. Otherwise, this fight maybe would have been in Canada.
Well, one thing I will say for if he does wind up landing a Klitschko fight, which at this point sounds kind of, you know, likely, from everything that I've heard and read, the Klitschkos are pretty bitchy at the negotiating table, and they're probably not going to just stand there and, like, let him get some crazy deal without getting a, you know, like a rematch clause or something like that.
Right.
So I don't think that it would be just like a clean, you know, Stiver knocks him out, takes the title, flies away type of situation. It would be like a, you know, he knocks him out, takes the title, and then is tied into like a rematch and rubber match for the next 2 years or something like that. But you know, there's possibilities there.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But it's a fight that, I mean, of all the potential Klitschko fights, I mean, I maybe would look forward to that one a little bit. Just because, you know, Bruce Stiver's got the power, and he does seem a little bit craftier and physically bigger than a lot of the guys who have been in there with him. So
yeah,
it's almost like,
I mean,
I think Stiver is like a better version of Derek Chisora, you know, who at least was able to, like, hold his own. I mean, it's a different style, obviously, but in terms of just being a big guy who can kind of at least, like, you know, go, you know, use his size a little bit to kind of hang in there and absorb the blow. And I know he was fighting Vitaly, but... You know, maybe Stiver can, you know, do what he kind of do a similar to what he did to Areola and just box a little bit and protect himself and not, you know, not get discouraged like so many other guys. But, man, a lot of these Klitschko fights, like, he's just pounding a helpless, like, smaller, slower guy. And that's what,
yeah,
and the guy is good. And we saw what he did to David Haye. He basically just outboxed him cleanly because Haye was looking to avoid contact all night. And Haye is obviously quick. But, you know, Stiver's got fast hands and he's got power and he can... Oh.
Sorry.
Genius. No, it's fine.
You know, I pay relatively close attention to the sport, and, you know, sometimes there are fighters that not a lot of people have seen that I've seen just because, I don't know, I went out of my way to look or something like that. But even with that said, with most Klitschko opponents recently, well, I don't want to say most, but with a lot of Klitschko opponents in the last few years, literally a fight gets announced, and I'm like, who the fuck is that? I have no fucking clue who Pianetta was before the fight. I had no clue at all. You know, like, half of these guys, Lee Pai, I was like, who the fuck is that? I have no idea who that is.
Yet, we're probably the only two guys who really anybody knew, unless I can think, Adamek.
At the very least, at least we've seen Stiver twice on television now, so we have an idea of kind of what he fights like, you know. I guess that's an improvement.
It seems like he has kind of what you need, you know, if someone was going to threaten Klitschko. The thing about, like, Deontay Wilder, because he's so big and kind of gangly, and because of that one fight where he kind of took that jab and, like, stumbled back a little bit, he still seems a little bit vulnerable, you know. Like, he still seems kind of, like, not fragile, but, like, wouldn't shock me if Klitschko just kind of battered him around the ring. Like, there's something about his footwork that I'm dubious. I know he can punch, but Stivern seems like more, you know what I mean? Like just like he's more kind of like, I don't know, like his defense is a little tighter, and he kind of like he seems like more like stable in there. Like he's not going to just get. I mean, you see the way Vladimir just kind of pounds so many of these guys, and it's like, I don't know. I feel like Stivern could at least like stand up to the punches better than most.
You know, and that actually kind of goes into what I wanted to bring up, because we didn't really talk about the fight all that much. But for a couple minutes there, while Chris Arreola was coming forward and while he was kind of banging away at Stivern while he was on the ropes and all this type of stuff, for a minute there I was like, is Stivern hurt? Or is he just kind of like playing possum and messing around? I couldn't really tell. Well, in hindsight, it sure seems like he was just playing possum. But, I mean, it does kind of make me wonder that if he were in with, like for example, Vlad Klitschko, if he tried to play that role, if he tried to kind of just put up his hands and take punches, does that really work as well against a guy like Vlad Klitschko?
Usually, no. It's exactly what he wants opponent to do.
Although I guess it did work for Brewster, but go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know. I just would be interested to see what happens if Klitschko ever gets hit clean again.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that was, I guess, part of the reason why I thought that at the very least, as far as Arreola goes, that, you know, there was some promise with him against Vlad Klitschko, because there is that window with Vlad Klitschko, with his chin, with stamina, et cetera. And while, you know, Chris Arreola obviously isn't coming into fights in really great shape, he's got a good chin. He can take a punch. He's a tough dude. He's the type of guy who's not really going to just quit, you know, and so it's at least, you know, I mean, we're to the point now where when we're trying to find a guy to face Vlad Klitschko and be successful, we're basically taking anything. You know, like, oh, does the guy have his citizenship? Okay, let's fucking do it. You know, does the guy wash his hair in the morning? All right, bring him in. I'll take anything at this point.
Yeah, and since Stivern doesn't have a TV and he did nothing but watch tapes of Areola for the last, like, 3 months, he can do the same, and since Klitschko may end up fighting Pulev, so he might end up, you know, he might not fight Stivern for another year, he can just spend the next year watching all of Vladimir's tapes.
There you go.
And then he'll be well prepared, and, you know.
He'll have plenty of time, because he'll be off for another year, so he'll have plenty of time to be watching tape on Vlad Klitschko.
Exactly. Yeah, well, Don King will take him on a world tour. That's what I'm just reading right now.
There you go. Yeah,
Seeing him in the ring very soon.
Well, if you had your cake and you can eat it too, James Foley, who would you have Stivern against next?
I'd love to see Stivern against Deontay. You know, I don't
It's
probably more deserving fighters than Wilder, since, you know, Stivern now has, like, a belt, and he probably legitimately is a top five heavyweight. But I think it'd be, you know, that to me, that's a big test. Knock out Stivern, I mean, dude, not only will I endorse him fighting Klitschko, I'd probably pick him against Klitschko.
Yeah, I mean, that's the lingering question with Deontay Wilder, is the whole chin thing. With his legs, I mean, he just has skinny legs. He just doesn't really look like a very tough, durable guy. Maybe he is, and, you know, we don't know. But yeah, I think that enduring a guy like Stivern would potentially, yeah, that would maybe convince me. Like, when we had Kelsey McCarson on the show, I think it was last year, when we had him on the show, he sounded pretty damn sure that Deontay Wilder was going to be the next thing in the heavyweight division. And I was like, nah, I don't know about that. I think it's kind of premature. Well, now he's looking a lot smarter than me.
Well, I mean, he hasn't really done anything yet. But, look, he looks good. I mean, yeah, he looks like he's got the whole, you know, package. But we haven't really seen him. I mean, Malik Scott, you know, that didn't really prove much to me. I mean, if the punch had landed clean and really knocked him out, I'd be all about it. But, you know, Wilder really needs to get in with a guy who has some kind of, not just like some, you know, kind of mythical boxing craft, which we gave Malik Scott credit for that, even though that fight didn't really show it. But, you know, he needs to be in there with somebody who can take a punch and who can punch back and give him some adversity. And you know, that's, I think, when we'll find out what he's really made of. And Areola seemed like a good candidate for that. And, he, you know, he may still be. I mean, I still think, you know, assuming Areola's not totally damaged, which he shouldn't be, he's still probably the best opponent Deontay Wilder will face, you know, if they fought tomorrow. But, well, you let Areola heal a little bit. But, if they fought in a few months, Areola's still probably his best opponent. So he hasn't done much, but, yeah, he looks like he's got, I mean, he's got the package. He's got the look. But, you know, we've seen before, I mean, when you step up in competition, fighters can look a lot different. And that's the way he moves, like, the way he kind of moves around the ring. It looks like against Vladimir, you know, I can't help but thinking that Deontay is Wilder. I mean, Jesus, that Deontay is vulnerable.
Wilders.
Christ, man. I'm still a little sick, so. But, you know what I'm saying? Like, it just, until we see him take a big punch and survive, or at least be in there with somebody capable of, you know, hurting him, it's impossible to say. I mean, we're just speculating. Which I guess is what
yeah.
we do.
Yeah. No, it's tough to that's the whole problem though. That's what's tough to really gauge, because a lot of these guys, there's, I say it, I probably say it like once every fucking show, but there's such a huge gap. There's a huge gap between, you know, Berman Stivern knocking out Chris Areola and then going directly to Vlad Klitschko, despite the fact that if you're just going by the numbers in the division, that's what should happen, you know, just because the gap is that large. But, you know,
and dude,
does he do?
Well, talking about gaps, look at Seth Mitchell, Chris Areola, and then look at Chris Areola, Stivern, you know, and it's like Mitchell had beaten a similar level of opposition to what Deontay Wilder has. I mean, Wilder maybe has improved in that the last couple of fights, maybe. But, you know, it's not a – I mean, there are, like you said, huge levels, big gaps here. And I think Stivern, Joan, he's on another one. Wilder still has a lot to prove. But it's time for that one fight that can do it, you know, a fight that can do it. But I think if, you know, if Wilder fought Stivern, I mean, we would both pick Stivern, right?
At this point, I probably would have to, just because that's the best that I've seen between the two of them. Knocking out Chris Areola is the best that we've seen, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I would probably pick Stivern, although, I mean, there's always that chance with Wilder having seemingly legitimate power. So, yeah, but I would probably pick Stivern.
He's still a big unknown, but, you know, the one thing that I do, agree about, or at least, like, you know, is that I don't think Vladimir is unbeatable. I think the idea that, I mean, against a lot of these guys, we know that there's really no hope, but there is someone who's going to come out there. It might be Stivern, it might be Deontay Wilder, but eventually, I think somebody is going to catch the guy and hurt him again, you know, and maybe he'll retire before that happens, but, you know, you take a few more fights, and somebody's going to do it, and I do think that he's one of those, like, you know, long champions. We're going to see him lose at some point. I think it will happen.
Well, you know, he was talking the other day about going on for another 10 years or something. That ain't going to happen.
I'd be shocked. I mean, it's not necessarily like if Deontay knocks out, like, Klitschko, that it proves that he's better than him or anything like that. It's just that, you know, this is boxing, and you fight long enough, you know, a guy comes around and stuff happens, and I think somebody will beat him. It's not unsafe. You know, it could be Wilder. It could be any, you know, it could be a few different guys. I think it's more likely to be somebody with power, and we've seen that with Stivern at a pretty high level. We've seen it with Wilder, yes, but not at a great, you know, not against a real tough. I mean, no one Wilder is knocked out is someone that we would be sitting here talking about, you know, the iron-shinned, you know, strongest will in the sport. I mean, he hasn't knocked out anyone that really, it's that shocking that he knocked them out. Maybe if hadn't been, you know, hurt badly by Chisora in the fight before. But again, that punch on Scott was so kind of iffy that it's like, it's just hard to give that kind of credit, you know? And
nobody that he's knocked out, we wouldn't let anybody that he's knocked out get into bed with our wives, is what we're saying.
Right. And also, any fighter that competed before 1979 would have knocked any of those guys out in, like, 30 seconds.
When boxing Shit, that's kind of generous.
A great sport.
But I think that's generous, but whatever. That's neither here nor there. I'm talking about Spinnerio 3. Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's tough to really gauge where these guys are going to go from here, I guess. But, yeah, I would kind of like to see Chris Arreola start winding it down a little bit as far as who he's going to be fighting and talking about, you know, world titles. Although, in the post-fight interview, I do have to say I was a tiny bit surprised that he was that honest and that he basically said exactly what I just said. He was like, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be, you know, competing for titles and all this type of stuff. And if I would have lost to a guy like Seth Mitchell, then I just would have retired. But, you know, but he was like, if I'm going to be losing to Berman Stivern, you know, this is not a shameful thing. And maybe I just need to be fighting guys who aren't that good. That's basically what he said. And I would have to say I agree 100% with that.
He's a great interview.
Well, I will say, well, since I'm in the name dropping spirit, he did give my wife a piggyback ride once, and I did have a few beers with him.
I think
an actual piggyback ride.
From that.
It's not a euphemism. Yeah. An actual piggyback ride. But it was. He's a funny dude. He's a good guy.
That's why you're being so complimentary of him.
All right. So I did his taxes once. Who gives a shit?
On that. Ethics.
Fucking heavyweights, man.
Let's talk about your boy Marquez.
Yeah, yes,
your hero.
Definitely. Yes, yes, yes. So, passed my calls for Stivern Arreola 3 because I just like to see it. Not really. Now, this next weekend we have Juan Manuel Marquez taking on Mike Alvarado. So, I'm kind of torn on this fight myself. I'm torn between believing that Juan Manuel Marquez has kind of squandered some of the momentum that he got from knocking out Manny Pacquiao and also getting older, you know, looking like he maybe had lost a step or so against Tim Bradley, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And also realizing that pretty much all of Mike Alvarado's last 4 or 5 fights have been bloody wars or at the very least, you know, strong skirmishes that he's given a piece of himself in. And now I don't really know what to expect from him inside the ring. And on top of that, Mike Alvarado keeps getting into trouble outside the ring too, suggesting that he's, you know, maybe not 100% dedicated to the sport. He comes into the weigh-in looking like shit. You know, he's dehydrated, and then that's an excuse, blah, 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 blah. So I don't even really know what direction to go in with this, and so it's kind of one of those all other things being equal, I'm just going to predict that Marquez, who I think is the better fighter, is going to win. What are you thinking?
I think you got to go with Marquez, but I do think, you know, that potentially could turn into a pretty good fight. But I don't think Marquez really has lost that much luster. You know, I mean, he's getting older, but I think the Pacquiao knockout kind of, like, cemented, you know, legend status. So it doesn't, you know, he didn't get, like, knocked out or really destroyed by Tim Bradley. I mean, he's holding his own, and Bradley's a top welterweight, you know. So the other thing is Marquez has never really been a welterweight. He kind of moved up to catch, you know, Pacquiao, and then by virtue of a spectacular performance. I mean, Tim Bradley is really the only world-class guy he's fought in the division outside of Pacquiao. So, is this, by the way, it's a catchweight, right? 143?
So I think
so,
yeah.
Kind of a welterweight fight.
Yeah, it's not 140 in any event.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think Alvarado gives him a good fight if he's not completely damaged from that, you know, the pretty bad beating against Provodnikov. Because I think Marquez's style should theoretically allow Alvarado to, you know, do a little bit of, you know, be able to work more. I mean, Provodnikov basically just suffocated him and just, you know, beat his ass across the ring in the last few rounds of that fight. Marquez, because he's so kind of, you know, or Marquez only really brawls when his opponent comes in and brawls. And the way Alvarado boxed against Rios, you know, I think he'll be able to do some stuff and throw some combinations and maybe pressure Marquez and trouble him a little bit. But I also think that he doesn't have the speed and he's not on the same level as Tim Bradley. And, you know, confidence-wise, too, you have to question a guy who loses like that against Provodnikov, you know, mentally. I mean, and I think Alvarado's a really interesting guy, very articulate, you know, very well-spoken and a great interview. But this is the Hype Fighters Up for Being Good interview show, I guess. But,
yeah.
You know, he it's going to take a lot, man, to, like, mentally overcome that, to think you can compete against, like, a world-class guy like Marquez, who, as we saw against Pacquiao, apparently, you know, carries a punch all the way up to 147. So, you know, I think it's – I'm kind of predicting – I'm making the stock prediction that I've seen on Twitter that it's going to be, you know, an exciting fight. Maybe not quite to the level of, like, a Marquez Juan Diaz, but somewhere like that, or his fight against Katsidis, a really good fight that Marquez can take over and stop Alvarado late, either with, like, a sustained punishment. I doubt he one punch knocks him out, but, I mean, I could see him, you know, doing enough to beat him like that, or just winning a decision. But I think eventually Marquez's class probably shows here, and there's a reason why he selected Alvarado instead of Provodnikov.
Yeah, you know, and we, especially after the Marquez-Bradley fight, I remember I said it, and I'm pretty sure you agreed with me, that the Provodnikov, the idea of making a Provodnikov fight against Marquez was just like, yes, yeah, mm-hmm, yep, that's what I want. And so that we didn't get it is, needless to say, a bummer, you know, and I you know, all things being fair, all things being equal, all things being what they, you know, should or whatever in a fair world, which we don't live in, that's probably what should have happened, but that's not what's happening. But at the very least, you know, do you think that the style matchup and whatever, do you think that that will have any bearing? Do you think that, you know, I don't know. I guess what I'm getting at is, as far as Mike Alvarado goes, you know, he's a kind of a lanky guy. He does have the ability to box sometimes. You know, he can be lured into a brawl, obviously, because his last four or five fights, that's mostly been what they are. But, you know, when he does kind of get up on his toes, use his reach, use his jab, like we saw in spots in the Rios rematch, you know, do you think that if he uses that type of style, that's, you know, that gives him a decent chance?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, but I don't know. I mean, I think... I don't really see it happening. I mean, I think that's his best. Yeah, that's probably his best chance, you know, to take advantage of the fact that Marquez is more inclined to be a counterpuncher. And if you know, Alvarado boxes responsibly and can get his combinations off and then get out, you know, avoid those counterpunches, he could, you know, win, you know, rack up some points and win some rounds. And that's, at the same time, you know, Alvarado's a bigger guy. I think he's a decent puncher, even though he hasn't, you know, he's been fighting pretty tough guys with Provodnikov and Rios. I mean, they're not really, those guys don't, you know, they're not like knockout victims, but I think Alvarado can punch, and he's going to be a lot bigger than Marquez, and Marquez has been hurt tons of times, you know, countless times, and just never been knocked out, but who knows, man? I mean, you know, Marquez is 40, and maybe if Alvarado can, some combination of boxing, but he manages to land a big punch in there and hurts him, I think Alvarado has a better chance of winning the fight than I think the perception is, because I think most people are looking right past this. I mean, this fight's had, like, no buzz to it. And I think Alvarado's, I do think he's alive. I think he's alive in there. But, I mean, I think you're kind of taking a leap of faith to actually pick him to win. You know what I mean? I mean, there's no reason, based on what we've seen with Marquez against Bradley and Alvarado's last fight against Provodnikov, I mean, there's no real reason to pick the upset outside of just kind of gambling that maybe Marquez is losing a step and Alvarado's bigger and blah, 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 you know. But it's fair to say that it could, you know, Alvarado has some things going for him, and he should be able to at least compete with Marquez for a while, and he's not going to get blown away.
Yeah, he's not a shitty fighter by any means, you know, and I think that especially it, well, okay, the combination of going life and death with Brandon Rios, who at his best is a monster, and, you know, and then getting kind of, you know, worked a little bit, but still winning in the rematch. And then Brandon Rios going on to do almost absolutely nothing against Manny Pacquiao, which in itself isn't shameful, but it is what it is. You know, I think that the combination of that and then Alvarado subsequently taking a pretty bad beating against Ruslan Provodnikov, who going into the fight, a lot of people were kind of like, you know, Provodnikov, well, at least going into the Bradley fight, a lot of people were downgrading Provodnikov as a ESPN2 level type of fighter, including myself. I didn't think that he'd be able to compete. He did. He not only competed, but may have deserved to win and then went on to beat the crap out of Mike Alvarado. So I think that all of these factors joining in together have kind of combined to make it really difficult to confidently pick Mike Alvarado against a guy like Juan Manuel Marquez, who is a, you know, he's a tactician. The guy is at his best, one of the best fighters in the world, and has been for the last, what, 12 years, maybe 13, 14 years. So, yeah, it's I do kind of feel bad for Alvarado in a sense, because he's not really being given a clean chance to win this.
Right, and, you know, and Marquez has faced, like, every style, basically. And he's always done, you know, the thing is, like, Tim Bradley had success because his hands are, he's just quicker. And he was able to, like, kind of get in, hit Marquez and get out and avoid, you know, Bradley's also, and he showed against Pacquiao in the first fight especially, you know, Bradley's a pretty good defensive fighter, too. And a lot of that is because of his speed. You know, Alvarado doesn't have that kind of speed. So he was able to box well against Brandon Rios. You think that Marquez, you know, more accurate counterpuncher. He's seen it all before. He's probably going to be able to take advantage of Alvarado and be able to time him, and Alvarado won't be able to, you know, his defense has shown some holes in a few different fights. I mean, obviously, you know, it's hard to think of a Mike Alvarado fight that he actually won cleanly in the last, like, of all of these major high-profile fights. And his best performance was definitely in the Rios rematch, but even in that fight, he got staggered across the ring, you know, and was taking some leather early. So, yeah, it's tough to pick Alvarado here, man. I mean, I think if you're picking Alvarado, you're basically just banking that Marquez is old and the size will be a bigger factor than we realize. Because, you know, you can't ignore, I mean, Alvarado, if this is like most of his fights, and now he's got an extra 3-pound window, he might come in the ring at 160 pounds. You know,
yeah,
between 155 and 160, and he's obviously taller, too. But you got to give Marquez the benefit, you know. I mean, you got to imagine that Marquez, you know, Alvarado's not the type of fighter who's troubled Marquez in the past, and you have to imagine that he's going to have enough left in his tank, you know, to beat him.
And, you know, I actually totally had forgotten about this, and I probably wasn't going to bring it up at all, just because I didn't even think about it, but somebody who's following along me tweeting on Twitter named David Fahey had brought up, he said, I found people are talking about the fight because of the venue, looking forward to it myself. And so it might get kind of lost on people who aren't from the West Coast or aren't from Southern California. But, of course, the fight is going to be taking place at the Forum in Inglewood, which is an absolutely legendary West Coast fight venue. I mean, it's a legendary fight venue. There's not really anything else to say. A number of you know, just absolutely awesome fighters, a bunch of awesome fights have taken place there over the course of a couple decades. You know, the Paul Bankey versus Daniel Zaragoza, I think all three fights happened there. That was a great trilogy. Marco Antonio Pereira, he fought when he was early on in his career there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think Marquez did too, actually, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Point is, No, I'm not going to. I don't see fights live anymore, bro. I need to be judging them in solitude, or else I don't get the score right.
If you see it live, you're too influenced by the crowd.
Yeah, when I go see fights live, there are too many people there whose taxes I've done, bro. I can't do it. I just can't handle it. Too many memories. But
yeah, I do like a Bartman style. I just wear like headphones and listen to the radio broadcast. It's the only like not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then
not be here for
it. Yeah, I watch it in 3D, but then I also watch it in 3D while I'm doing push-ups. So it's kind of gives me a weird optical illusion, but. We're fucking idiots. But the point is that it's a legendary fight venue. And that has kind of factored into the excitement a little bit about it. I think at least here on the West Coast it has. So,
Rich Murata's like all over Twitter, just like reminiscing on past fights and stuff. So check out his timeline if you want to scroll down memory lane. But hey, Patrick, dude, you tapped on something big though there, which when we were just messing around about the, you know, watching, like, you know, how we watch the fights with the blindfold on and shit, and the only true way to score it. But it was kind of like Scott Crisp, like, tweeted last night, and something a similar effect of, like, why are boxing fans, like, so critical of the way that, like, other people are boxing fans? You know what I mean? Like, of each other. Like, it's always, like, you're not watching it in the right way, or you're not, like, appreciating it in the right, you know, or, like, you don't do enough, you know, you're not, like, watching the, you know, 4 a.m., like, feet New Zealand, like, Golden Gloves tournament or what, you know. Why is there so much, like, rivalry just among boxing fans with each other about, like, the way that they like the sport and how they follow the sport?
Are you asking seriously or rhetorically?
No, I'm asking, like, yeah.
Well, I mean, I really have no idea.
Guys.
I mean, oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, and I have been one of them, I'm sure, at some point. You know, I'm sure at some point I've been like, oh, look at this motherfucker. He's not even watching this fight, you know. But I think that boxing is just
too bad, too bad he missed a great fight.
I don't know what fight these guys are watching. They missed a good fight, though. But, you know, I think the combination of boxing being really insular and really, like, xenophobic, you know, I mean, when MMA was starting to come up a few years ago and starting to kind of like plant its roots, and now that fervor has died down a little bit, but when MMA was really starting to get popular a few years ago, it was like that shit threatened the hell out of a number of boxing fans, and they started, you know, even Bob Arum with his whole, you know, bunch of wrestling faggot type of things and all this stuff, and I'm like, holy shit. I think the combination of boxing just being so it's just so, like, you know, we're like the redheaded stepchildren of the sports world, you know, like you know, we're basically just a half notch above, like, NASCAR, WWE, you know, sorry for the people who are fans of those sports, but, you know, I think that in the grand scheme of things, that's kind of generally how it's perceived. And so I think that it's – I don't even really know why. I feel like that so many of us should be more like – there should be more camaraderie because of that, because of the fact that we're, like, you know, suffering this shit together. But I don't know why. I don't really know why. All I know is that people are super critical and, like, angry at other people and the way people are fans. It's crazy.
Yeah. And you're right, man. Admitting you're a boxing fan is not really – it's just like I don't watch either, but I'd much rather say that I followed Formula One than NASCAR. It sounds classier.
Le Mans or some shit.
European thing. But yeah, dude, you know, you always see these, like, where it's like, or somebody who's, like, not a huge fight fan, like, jumps in and, you know, a guy who doesn't, like, study tape of boxing, you know, 17 hours a day, comes in and asks, like, a very innocent question. And you see it from the highest to the lowest level. I mean, I see it in, like, Dan Rayfield's chats, and I see it on just random dudes on Twitter who no one's ever heard of. And, you know, like, somebody's just posing, like, an innocent question, and they're treated like an idiot for asking. And it's like, are you not allowed to watch? I mean, like, unless you know, were watching a black and white VHS of fucking, you know, sonogram of Muhammad Ali fight when you were in the womb, and you're not allowed to, you know, like, follow the sport. I mean, like, at what point, you know, like, doesn't that alienate people if you're asking, you know, you see people asking the questions all the time on in the Rayfield chat, and, like, you know, just like, hey, is this, what about this fight? And it's like, Cold War, you idiot. It's like, well, maybe the guy doesn't have the context of that. And, I mean, it's not, I mean, I understand there's some really stupid questions, but I just think it's funny.
Yeah,
like,
some people
don't know.
Do four hours of
Google research before you come into this chat. I don't know. I mean, it's just like, fuck, if we all love the sport, we should want people to follow it, you know? And I try to, like, you know, people...
And that's the funny thing. Well, and that's the funny thing is that, like, you know, so many of us talk about the fact that the sport seems to be in need of new fans, you know, rather than... and that kind of ties into the MMA thing I was talking about, where MMA seemed to be maybe not so much it's not an apples-to-apples comparison when you're talking about fans of MMA versus fans of boxing, because there's a lot of overlap and, you know, et cetera, just because you're a fan of one doesn't make you a fan of the other, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, so it's not a direct comparison, but, you know, it seemed that MMA was picking up a lot of new fans, and that boxing seemed to be in need of that. That boxing wasn't really picking up a whole lot of new fans. And so that's been a talking point that, you know, hey, boxing needs new fans. We need new fans, blah, blah, blah. Well, we sure as shit don't act like we need new fans, because when new fans try to come in, we treat them like fucking shit. You know, like, we either treat them like shit by offering them boxing cards that fucking suck and have no entertainment value, or we treat them like shit in the way you're talking about, where when they're just simply just trying to learn and they're simply trying to see, you know, a context of why things are this way or why aren't things this way, why can't these two fighters fight? Oh, you fucking moron. It's like, holy shit, dude, I was just asking a question, bro. You know, and so I don't know why it's that way, but we sure as shit do act that way, and it's crazy.
But it's like a weird culture, and I don't know, you know, it's, I don't see it in, like, other sports where people are constantly, you know, because, like, I mean, probably my three favorite sports are boxing, tennis, and basketball. And basketball is a team sport, so it's, like, a little bit different. But, like, I don't see tennis fans, like, constantly trying to, like, validate each other by, like, referencing, like, obscure, you know, tennis matches from, like, the 80s and, like, you're an idiot if you've never heard of it type of thing, you know?
And boxing tends to be also, at least from what I've observed, it seems to be kind of in a funny position as far as being digitized and being on the internet and everything, especially because, like, in the early 2000s and stuff like that, and I remember because I was, you know, among these people, but when, like, bulletin boards and stuff like that and boxing fight sites first started popping up, like, you know, Seconds Out was among some of the first ones, House of Boxing and stuff like that. When these sites first started popping up, you know, it was almost like that was exactly the type of mentality you had to develop when you were a boxing fan, because that was the only way you were really going to be talking about boxing with anybody for most people. It was going to be on the internet. I live in San Diego, which used to be a solid fight town. I got fucking nobody here, dude. If I order a pay-per-view, I'm watching it by myself, you know, or maybe every so often one of my friends will want to come over and watch it if it's somebody they've heard of, or if I'm, you know, convincing enough and telling them it'll be a good fight, and then inevitably it's not a good fight and they fucking never want to watch again. But, you know, I got, like, nobody. So that was the only way to talk to people, you know, about boxing was on the internet. And then the internet is, like, this huge, like, Wild West free-for-all when it comes to speaking to other people. So I feel like a lot of the people who came up on the internet and just kind of, you know, learned to talk boxing that way, a lot of us have just kind of developed that shell, you know, developed that attitude about it where everything's confrontational. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, that thing is, like, there's some amazing old fights. I mean, obviously, like, fights that happened before we were born, and that's great. And I love watching old fights, and I love, like, people recommending stuff that I haven't heard of or whatever. But I don't really like being told I'm an idiot by some, like, 22-year-old kid who wasn't even alive because I, like, scored a fight from 40 years ago differently. Or because I'm, like, you know, offering my opinion based on what I've read about, you know, something involving, like, Joe Louis or Jack Johnson or someone from 100 years ago, and having some dude who's, like, read some different shit on the internet who has no idea and also wasn't around there claiming that his point of view is, like, you know. And that kind of thing is just, like, it just infuriates, and it's an attitude I see it, and I don't give a fuck, right? But it's an attitude I see with, like, other people who are probably, like, not as much of dicks as I am myself, and then I feel bad, because, like, these guys are just, like, nice guys, like, asking questions, and, like, then they're being treated like morons, because, like, you know, you read a different book about Muhammad Ali than he did.
Yeah, for sure. It's crazy that we're so, like, cannibalistic that way, because we really don't need to be. But, yeah, I guess that's just how we do it. I don't know. And, you know, you've said in the past that you think Scott has a really good grasp on, like, you know, just kind of issues. And he brings up things that, like, your average fan seems to think about. And so I think that's interesting.
He's always looking comment sections in Bad Left Hook, I'm sure, you know, are where a lot, he sees a lot of stuff that I think gives him an idea of, like, what people are talking about, you know. And, he just said something like, you know, why are boxing fans so mean to each other about the way that we're fans or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, no shit. I mean, well, that's part of the reason why I do what I do with the whole boxing history thing is, you know, I do it also because I love researching and talking about boxing and all that type of stuff too, but I also do it because, you know, I want people to know about this stuff. I don't think, like, your average boxing fan doesn't know, you know, about a whole lot of, I don't know, middleweight title holders from yesteryear or whatever. So, you know, I feel like teaching people about what happened in the past, teaching them the history of the sport, helps them to understand or have a better perspective of why things are the way they are now, what they could be, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So that's, you know, I don't think that makes me any better than anybody or anything. Okay, it makes me a whole lot better. But still, it's,
well,
know,
I've seen you in some stuff where you could have been a dickhead, but you actually weren't. You were decided to be a gentleman for once.
Sometimes I regret being a douche. You know, I try not to be. 10 years ago, 12 years ago, when we were doing the whole, you know, forum and message board thing, I was a douchebag. I was. I'm not going to deny that. I was a straight-up asshole. Just because that was just kind of how it was. But I've grown up, you know, and I have to, like, you know, consciously control my urges to be like, bro, you're fucking dumb, pretty much all day long. You know, it's kind of sad to admit that, but it's true.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't even know how we got from Marquez Alvarado to here.
Oh, it's my bad.
Ah, it's okay.
But dude, you hyped up this, like, bringing all the history back to the forum, and that's how far from your house, and you're not even going to go.
I know.
You're not a true boxing head.
I know, dude. Hashtag boxing heads. I'm not one of them. No, for me, honestly, the whole attending fights live thing, it's just been kind of put on hold for the moment just because there's a, fuck it, I guess I'll just break it just because we're here and why not, and it's probably going to be happening soon. But my wife and I are actually probably going to be moving to TJ, Tijuana, relatively soon, and it's been kind of in the works just because it's a money thing, actually. It's so that we can save up money and come back and buy a house. Because her parents are there and they live in a nice part of town, blah, blah, blah. But, so with the whole Padres thing and then with that kind of looming and then, you know, some other potential changes, I was like, you know what, I'm just not going to be doing a whole lot of, like, whim type of stuff for a while. And so, you know, and on top of that, because of my work schedule, I usually work Saturdays and it's like, it's a pain in the fucking ass to, like, get days off and stuff like that. So all of those things coming together kind of mean that, you know, it's difficult for me to just be like, all right, well, I'm just going to go to a fight this weekend, you know. Otherwise, if it were, like, a handful of years ago, I'm 100% sure I would be going.
And you have a wife and daughter, so that's kind of hard to just, like...
Oh, no, don't, no. Whatever.
Unless
they don't mean anything,
like,
bro.
You know, my move, just like, I'm going to the store, I'll be back in a minute, and then 4 hours later.
Yeah, I'm, my wife's Mexican,
more often than
so I'm
stuff.
Pretty sure she'd fucking stab me.
Yeah, I actually probably don't want to do that.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure she'd hurt me, bro.
It's just one of the few perks of being a hashtag boxing blogger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, getting sat in auxiliary seating and, you know, applying for credentials and having them send me back a picture in my email, a picture of a middle finger. You know, stuff like that. That's one of the perks of being a boxing blogger.
Weren't you the dude who sold your credential at the Mayweather-Canelo fight?
Don't start spreading fucking...
Or you're the guy who stopped somebody. I get confused.
Oh, well, pretty close. I know that, no. It was just a rumor
media
going around.
No, that's rumors. We don't know anything about those.
Totally unsubstantiated. Well, here, let's, before we, for anybody listening, we decided to do a shorter show today, and I guess we'll shut it down pretty soon here. But before we do, so what's your final prediction then for Marquez Alvarado?
Alvarado, first round knockout.
Yep, that's how it's going. Mr. Cleo, right over here.
It'll be like Chris Areola against Seth Mitchell.
Just like that.
No, I think my final prediction, I'm going to say Marquez in like an 8-4 decision and an exciting fight.
Yeah, I think that I think Marquez, he does potentially have the power edge in his back pocket. I mean, I almost feel like the knockout over Pacquiao, you know, don't get me wrong, it was huge and it meant a lot and blah, 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 and, you know, sent shockwaves around the sport and all this type of shit. But, you know, it was almost like deceptive in a way, because now going into fights, we're like, oh, well, Marquez has that equalizer. And it's like, well, I guess he kind of does, but he hasn't really shown it a lot. That was like the one time, you know. There have been other times where he punches hard, and he's clearly not a feather-fisted guy, but we shouldn't be expecting him to be, you know, scoring a whole lot of knockouts, you know, in general. As huge as that knockout was. So I guess on some level he does have some measure of, you know, punching power or whatever on his side. But I think that I'm probably going to agree with you that about an 8-4, maybe 9-3, something like that type of decision is probably in the works.
So you're saying that basically that Marquez landed a lucky punch on Pacquiao and it probably wouldn't have even come out of his corner to start the next round. Pacquiao would have won that TKO if he hadn't, with his eyes closed, landed a miracle punch.
Oh, yeah. No, it was clear that that Juan Manuel Marquez was going to be knocked out in the very next round. Everybody knows that. Everyone.
Yeah, I mean, it's we all saw it.
It's just,
we all saw it.
Yeah. Everybody saw it. That was hilarious about that whole thing. That I couldn't believe that so many people were on board with that mindset after that happened. But anyway. Yeah, I'd have to say
between like a perfect punch and a lucky punch, you know. But it's kind of like, I don't know. You know, if you want to get like so fucking literal about everything, I mean, everything that happens in the ring is a combination of like a whole lot of different things, including some element of luck, you know. But
yeah,
of course, it was a lucky punch. I mean, you know, the replay is pretty obvious. You could see it all being set up, you know, and that's what's so amazing about it. It was like, if you watch that final 10 seconds, it's like almost choreographed how it all plays out, you know, and there's anything but lucky.
Yeah, he was waiting for Manny to jump in. Yeah, he was waiting for Manny to jump in, and he wound up timing it perfectly. And like you said, every knockout or every huge punch or whatever is a combination of, you know, the whole timing of the situation, the timing of when the fight was made, et cetera, you know. Hand speed, all this other type of shit. So, yeah, it was just kind of hilarious to see so many people saying that, oh, come on, if he hadn't landed that punch, Manny was going to knock him out, like, any minute. Like, well, Marquez hasn't been knocked out himself either, so I don't know where you got that from. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's this weekend, I'd have to say that it's – well, let me ask you one last question real quick. As far as the hype – or I guess, you know, relative lack thereof surrounding, you know, Marquez Alvarado this weekend. Do you think that it should have had more, or do you think that maybe, I don't know, to me it seems about right, to be honest. I don't really feel like this fight should be, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
I think so too, because, it kind of has like a loser's bracket feel to it, you know? I mean, it's like, hey, it's the guy who lost to Provodnikov fighting the guy who lost to Bradley. And of course, you know, Marquez's stature, I mean, he deserves a lot more than that, you know? I think if Marquez was fighting Provodnikov, we would all be so hyped up for it, you know? And nobody would be saying, oh, Marquez lost to Bradley, it's, you know, we don't want to give us a, you know, nobody would be saying that. We'd all be like, hey, it was a bad style matchup with Bradley, but fuck, it's Marquez Provodnikov, it's going to be amazing, you know? It'd probably be a pay-per-view. But because he chose Alvarado, it's, you know, it has the feel to it of, like, he's picking a guy who didn't just lose, I mean, but just got destroyed. You know, I mean, like, really badly beaten up and completely dominated, basically. I mean, early rounds were close, but whatever. Provodnikov basically wiped the floor with him, you know. And it sucks. I think Alvarado is probably a better fighter than that night maybe represented. But, it's just because of that, I don't think people are really looking at this matchup. But on its own merit, it could end up being a really good fight. So I think the buzz is about right. You know, we're seeing one of the best fighters in the world still, regardless of what happened against Bradley. And Alvarado, like we said, stylistically and size-wise and all that, there's some things he can do to probably make it an interesting, exciting fight, like most of Marquez's fights against, you know, decent competition have been.
Yeah. Yeah, that 30-second clip, you summed it up pretty well there.
Oh, thanks, bro. Forgot to touch on one last thing. Victor Ortiz is really excited to get back in the ring per his Twitter account.
Oh, yeah, he totally called. He called Floyd and Maidana both pussies.
That's basically what the pay-per-view card was, right? Ortiz's leftovers. Clearly, Mayweather should have been disqualified, and Maidana, I think, probably should have been DQ'd too, if my memory serves. So I consider Ortiz to be undefeated myself.
Well, if you really scored those fights from an empty movie theater, then yeah. Come on. He should be, right?
I just don't see where he ever lost. I'm looking at his record, and it looks pretty, Colazzo. That was kind of controversial. So I don't know. He'll be back. He'll be back to reclaim his throne.
Yeah, I don't think there's any. What I'm saying is that I think that we need to start a religion where we drink the blood of Victor Ortiz and, pretend that it's Scientology. And then, potentially from there, go on to watch his reruns of Dancing with the Stars. I'm just spitballing here. We'll have to see how it goes.
I would totally hang 10 with Victor Ortiz.
I'd hang something with Victor Ortiz, I'll tell you that much, buddy. Did it just get weird? Got weird, didn't it?
You're not.
Sorry.
There's a little pausing going on, but
yeah.
You're not overly optimistic about Ortiz's comeback.
No, not totally optimistic about it. I don't even know.
I don't know.
If that guy fights, I'll watch. That's all I know.
You know what?
If he fights, I'll watch.
All I'm saying is if he avenges Colazzo, Maidana, and Mayweather, he could be the next De La Hoya.
De La Hoya? Shit, I think that he could be the next, I don't know, let me think of something real quick, the next, no, I got nothing. Got nothing at all.
The next governor of Ukraine?
Yeah, exactly. I think he could be the next guy that can step into North Korea and try to negotiate away the nukes.
Yeah, he will probably never win a meaningful prize fight ever again. But that said, I don't know. I still wouldn't mind seeing him fight Amir Khan or Brandon Rios. So, in favor of those, I'm all.
And the messed up thing is, as much as we can joke about this and as many, little stupid-ass, one-liners we can throw out here, he's literally, maybe 1 to 2 wins away from any of these fights. Literally.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
he just has to avenge
up.
All of his losses, and then he'll be right back where he was after the Berto fight.
Yeah, I think that's isn't that pretty much exactly what Richard Schaefer said, too?
I think so. Also, hey, how's the next Manny Pacquiao, Lucas Matisse, doing?
Yeah, well.
Nah, dude. We'll see how this running it back full circle. We'll see how this thing goes, man, with Golden Boy. And, maybe it was just all – there's obviously was some kind of discontent because we've seen tweets from De La Hoya hinting at it, and there's been, legitimate stories outside of that maniac on Twitter talking about it. So there's obviously something going on, and we'll see how it plays out. And if, Heyman takes his crew somewhere and they all, form a different promotional company, and maybe Oscar goes back and maybe Top Rank and Golden Boy combine, or who knows. But, it's from a business standpoint, that should be pretty fascinating. and another and probably ultimately another death blow to the sport that we all love.
Well, I just if they do combine forces, I want Oscar De La Hoya to be Hart, and then I want like Showtime to be Water, and then maybe Heyman can step in to be Earth or something. They can be like, with our powers combined, we form Captain Planet of Promoters. Captain Promoters. Yeah. I think, yep. Yep. I'm calling them right now. Calling everybody. This is the idea that I'm pitching.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's like the guys on Twitter who are always like, why can't HBO and Showtime just work together?
I don't understand. Yeah, I'm, yeah.
You know?
I think this is an idea.
But
still trying to get hired by Showtime.
I think the sport's doing pretty well, and I mean, we'll, you know, we could talk about that all day. But bottom line is, it's not going anywhere, and you know, as of right now, I think you know, the fights are always going to be what determines, the sport. All the bullshit aside.
Hey, there's a lot of 2014 left. There literally is a lot of 2014 left. So the first portion of the year hasn't been that great, you know. But, hey, man, 2013 kicked it out pretty hardcore in the last half of the year. So there's still a chance that that could happen. I hope it does happen because I felt spoiled as shit in the last half of 2013, and it was awesome. So, yeah, we'll just have to see where the wind blows us. Pause.
Yeah, and I'm optimistic.
Oh, we're total optimists, dude. Total optimists.
We're trying to bring positivity back into. I mean, I'm sick of all the snark and all the pessimism and negativity. It's fucked.
Yeah, these people aren't even real fans, right? I mean, come on.
Pretty
Hold
much.
Up a fucking lighter. All right, well, let's shut this shit down here, buddy. Everybody,
thank you.
Thank you. And everybody who listened in, thanks again so much. I didn't bother looking over at the site to see what the live listener numbers were yet, so hopefully it was more than like 4. But yeah, I have no idea. We'll have to see. But thanks again, everybody, for listening. We'll probably be back next week to recap the Marquez Alvarado fight. We'll see how it goes. James and I will talk. But thanks again for listening in. Please check out James's stuff at badlefthook.com and my stuff at queensburyrules.com. And we'll see everybody later. Thanks again. Take it easy.